Well, I know that Wisconsin is a special place, and it's filled with stories and great stories. Larry Mueller here again. Thank you for joining us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We just had a chance to talk with Jane Hamilton, who is a real Wisconsin treasure, about her book, The Excellent Lombards. Now we're going to get a chance to talk about the state in general and what makes it so special with the editor of Our Wisconsin magazine, Mike Beno. Mike joins us every couple of months to talk about the stories from around the state, and I'd love to hear from you. What makes Wisconsin special for you? What experiences have you had in the state? What's going on in your neck of the woods in Wisconsin? Join in, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And certainly if you've got some great Wisconsin photos, we always love to see great photos. Post them up on our Facebook page. Facebook page title, The Larry Mueller Show. And Mike Beno, welcome back.
Larry, thanks for having me. It's always a treat to join you.
And as always, circulation is thriving in our Wisconsin.
Thank you, Larry. Yeah, I started this in retirement. I didn't have enough to do, and I have about 2.5 jobs now, it seems. But hey, no complaints. I asked for it. We're beyond 100,000 subscribers in 3 years, and to put that in perspective, our old friend Wisconsin Trails, which is no longer with us, in 52 years, made about 80,000. So in 3 years, we're past 100, and it's continuing to go. We have subscribers in all 72 Wisconsin counties and in all 50 states, and we hear from them often.
You know, I was talking with Jill Nadeau, our producer, and she said, well, what, I wonder what we should talk about in the magazine. I said, well, I'll pick a few stories, and, we'll zero in maybe a little bit on those, and then we start reading these stories, and she picked a few, and I hadn't had a chance to look at the magazine yet, so I read that one. I'm like, boy, that's an interesting story, and then we went to... We were looking at the Wishing Tree of Wanakia. Boy, that's an interesting story you picked out. And pretty soon, I think Jill said something. Well, they're all interesting stories.
Thank you, Jill. Great to work with you. And it's great to hear such positive things coming back to us from the magazine. We try to keep this magazine, the stories, the tone, all positive. That's done on purpose. We think there's... A lot of negative things in the world, so we want to be the different thing, the ray of sunshine, as corny as that may sound, but the ray of sunshine that comes in people's mailboxes, and folks write in all the time saying we look forward to this just for that reason.
And again, I want to give our listeners a chance to join in. You can chime in with your own comments about our Wisconsin magazine or about what's going on in your part of the state at 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. You know, Jane Hamilton's book has to do with a family that owned a farm, which was really an orchard. And I was kind of struck. We were, talking with her about apple orchards, and we talked about succession of a family farm and how that can be difficult. And I think some of that certainly comes across in your story about the Grandview Orchard.
Yes, it does. This is an example of a reader-written story. By and large, we have some professional writers in this magazine, but the idea is that the great majority of it is written by regular readers, average neighbors, just like you and me and everyone across the state. Godfrey Gabriel is a man well into his 80s and spent his life on this family orchard and with his wife. And it was his greatest wish to try to pass this orchard on and keep it going. It's near Antigo. And it's a 25-acre patch of trees. But the neat thing about it is that it exists in an area that's largely potato farming. The flat area to the east of Antigo. There's a little cluster of hills, which is the terminal moraine country where the glacier kind of stopped. And it's soil like the moon, very thin topsoil, rocky, well-drained. Apples happen to like that, and they have hills, so they're far enough on a hill and on a proper slope that they can grow apples there. They don't have to worry about frost coming along and killing off the blossoms in the spring, which means a lost crop for the year. And they've carried it on for decades and decades. And he wrote a very wonderful story about what it was like on this hard scrabble orchard to make it and raise their family and raise bees to try and become beekeepers to try and pollinate their crop. And he loved that real well until the bears decided they loved it better, so he went out of the honey business. But the neat thing, Larry, that we didn't touch on in this story is he sent this piece to us handwritten on a torn out sheets of paper. Very eloquently written, which is not surprising, given the schooling folks had way back when. They had grammar drilled into them.
Yeah.
And he was hoping that he would be able to sell his orchard sometime. And we had this story, and we were working toward it. Lo and behold, just before we ran it, up stepped a younger woman, who has got a horticulture degree, never grew apples in her life, but she's moving from the western part of the state to take this thing over. And it's a wonderful ending, and it's an ending that sort of happened on the fly, I would say. It wasn't in his story. And these are the kind of personal, to-the-heart stories that people share with us. And again, as I've said here, I couldn't make these things up sitting at my desk. They're wonderful.
Yeah, that was a great ending to that. And I thought, I'm really happy to hear, I'm glad to hear this backstory, because he didn't write the book, he didn't write the piece with that in mind, that was going to happen.
No, it had not happened. The end of the piece was a little melancholy. We hope, my wife and I hope, that somebody will come along and keep this thing going, and bingo, it happened.
Yeah,
even before we got it in. So that gave us a happy ending.
It is perfect. Mike Beno, our guest, the editor of Our Wisconsin Magazine, talking with him about the latest issue. It's April-May issue, and just what's going on in the state of Wisconsin. So join in, 800-642-1234. Love to hear from you. So that story really touched me. And, you know, another person, there's so many interesting people in this state. And Betty Gregg, I had never heard of her. And here she is, someone from Wisconsin who was literally known all over the world.
Yes, the Fearless Greggs, okay. That story is wonderful because, it's a Wisconsinite who in the 1920s made good. I mean, she was a farm girl from up around Belgian country in southern Door. And in 1923, she was working in Milwaukee. In the 1920s, she was working in Milwaukee as a waitress, and she just wanted to be in showbiz. She just wanted to be in showbiz, and you see these. We have a glamour picture of her in there from the 20s.
Yeah.
She fits.
Yeah.
She answered an ad in Billboard to join something that sounds borderline circus and carny. She joined the Fearless Greggs. It was an auto trick act with cars somersaulting three and four times, and she had to drive a car beneath a car driven by the man who would become her husband. And the interesting part of this was autos that pass in the air. 5 years before
amazing.
Pearl Harbor, they drew 1.5 million spectators with this little show in Japan. The Emperor of Japan called it the greatest daredevil act ever to appear. They performed before the crowned heads of Europe. What I like about this story so much, besides her making it and becoming world famous, is the cheesy promotional language, carnival barking, that is in here. And her husband was just a peerless promoter, like P.T. Barnum, and he's saying, the greatest and most stupendous death-defying act in America, more sensational and attractive than a railroad collision. Well, gee, I want to see that. Those kind of stories are fun. And she lived out her life at Laurel Grove Senior Center in Manitowoc and gave up the keys to her car at age 95.
Yeah, and died in, she was 100-something, wasn't she?
Yeah.
And wound up in a little cemetery in the U.P.,
Just across the line, and after Fred Gregg died in 65, they were out in California working in film. She was Bing Crosby's stunt double in a 1936 musical comedy, Pennies from Heaven. After he died, she moved back to Wisconsin. He was not from Wisconsin. And she went from this promoter to marrying a retired court reporter from Manitowoc.
She must have kept him entertained for the rest of his life.
I mean, come on. What a difference. And so anyway, they married and they settled in Manti. But his family originally was just from across the line. She's buried in the family plot just across the river into the UP.
Maria in Washington Island. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hi, Larry. We so enjoy your show. Thank you. And we love our Wisconsin magazine. I had sent Mike Bino an ad maybe 2 years ago about Washington Island and the different lavender that's being raised here. And it's been a wonderful business. But one of the things we especially enjoy, my husband and I, especially me, I'm a city girl, is about the Amish farmers.
Oh.
That is such a wonderful piece of journalism every month in that magazine, or bi-monthly, but we so enjoy it, and it's interesting to learn about their life, which I didn't know that much about. So thank you so much for all the articles and all the wonderful publicity you give to this state.
Oh, thanks, Maria. Mike, a comment?
Maria, thank you for that tip on lavender growing in Washington Island. There's two farms back to back, and people have flocked there because of the stories. I think that we've heard a lot of good comments. Maria, you also sent us a story about a bicycle builder, and we got a lot of them here, but I'm going to work my way toward that one. On the Amish, we've joked on here before that our Wisconsin magazine is the only magazine that regularly runs stories about Harley riders and Amish in the same issue, and that's true. A little bit of history behind that. The person who founded this magazine with me in partnership a little over three years ago, Roy Ryman, the Amish Diary is a signature feature, I would say, in magazines Roy has done. And he's done this for 40 or 50 years. Roy's into his 80s, still has sparks flying off him, and he's working on projects all the time. But he grew up in Iowa, and central Iowa, with many Amish around, and he picked up on the fascination, the curiosity that we, the English, who are not Amish, we're known as English to them,
have for the Amish. You know what? Hang on to that thought, Mike. We need to take a quick break, and then we'll be back. Stay with us. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here, taking a look at Our Wisconsin, a publication devoted to our state, and joined by its editor, Mike Bino. Love to have him along. He comes by every couple of months to talk with us and share Wisconsin stories. You may have a Wisconsin story of your own to share, or maybe an event. Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. And Maria from Washington Island had said that she really enjoys the Amish farmer stories. And Mike, you were talking about Roy Ryman, who had a publisher who often had a long time interest in the Amish community.
Yeah, to finish that thought, In every issue of the magazine, we present a week-long diary of daily life from an Amish family. Owen Yoder is the patriarch of a family near Cecil on Highway 117, and they have a small dairy farm, organic dairy herd of 36 cows, and they also have a bakery attached to their home. And it's a diary of just what goes on, milking the cows twice. It's a lot of work. And people are quite interested in learning about the culture, learning about the Amish. And to be honest, the Amish Diary is probably the one part of the magazine we get the most mail on. People, for some reason, really enjoy reading about it.
It really is cool, and it's, you know, you sort of get, you read it every time, and you kind of get taken up in the lives of the family.
Well, they have 22 grandchildren. I mean, we talk to Owen and his wife Treva once in a while, and they get mixed up on the birthdays and the names a little bit. But man, you need some horsepower, not only horses, but in people to work on these farms. I stop in and see them, and I'm whining because the weather is hot, and I'm whining because this or that is going wrong, and I'm frustrated, and I pull into their yard to visit with them. I kid you not, it's August, it's 93 degrees, and here are the ladies with dresses all the way down to their ankles, long sleeves, bonnets on, hoeing, digging potatoes. And I'm in shorts in an air-conditioned car. What am I whining about?
Oh, boy. Well, Sharon in Minocqua has a comment, so let's go there. Sharon, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Larry. Hi, Mike. This is another wonderful show, as usual.
Thank you.
And one of your questions at the beginning of the show was, you know, what makes Wisconsin so special? I'm not a native Wisconsinite. I moved here. And I have just found the state to be so endearing because of the creativity, the ingenuity of the people, the independence. But I really just wanted to share a little bit of a story about a place that it was featured in the first hour of Wisconsin magazine. And I don't know how people would find it if it wasn't in a magazine like that, but it's the Kovac Planetarium in northern Wisconsin. And the story behind this planetarium is just amazing and fabulous, but the program that the gentleman who built the planetarium gives is just so educational. This is just a man who had an idea and just kind of followed through with it and just kind of created his own little planetarium in his backyard, but now it attracts people from all around the state.
And you visited.
We just visited this weekend, so that's why I called. Some friends of mine and I went up there and visited this weekend, and it was such a great experience. It's located, you know, east of Rhinelander, a little bit west of Crandon.
Yeah.
And it's just out in the middle of the woods. How many people build their own planetarium?
Well, thank you for calling, Sharon. And Mike, a comment.
Frank Kovac is one of the most amazing people I have ever met. He is in the back end of nowhere. He's on the edge of a tamarack swamp near outside of Monaco, and he's there because of the dark night sky. He's an astronomy buff, and he did indeed build the world's largest mechanical globe planetarium, meaning one that you sit within and it rotates around you, under the floor, over the top. And he built this entire building. He built the planetarium. It took him about 10 years' time, saving his money from working at the paper mill, working in all weather, middle of the day, middle of the night. The neighbors heard him winching things into position, shrieking noises in the woods under tents, and they began calling it Frank's Sanitarium. They sent food out to him to make sure he was okay. But what he built is just a marvel. And probably the story of how much work he put in is amazing. But as part of that work, he painted something like 5,000 stars the entire night sky at 45 degrees latitude in proper orientation and proper luminosity. He did it with luminous paint, and he did this without even knowing if it would work.
Yeah.
And it did. And people are just enjoying it. It's really something to see.
Yeah. Sharon, thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate that very much. And that was from your first issue?
Yeah, Kovac Planetarium. You can look that up. It was in our premiere issue. Went out there to see Frank, and we thought it was so unusual. We should do a story on it, and it's 4 years later, people are remembering it.
And that brings to mind a question someone else had wondered about, which was how do you select, and I'm sure you get more stories than you can use.
Yes, how do we select the story?
Yeah.
Well, to be honest, it's a lot of it's from the gut. My old journalism school professor, who I think you knew pretty well, Clay Schoenfeld, used to say to me at UW, "Mike, you can't get interested in it. How in the world do you expect 100,000 people to?" And that's what 35 years later, whatever it is, I hold that. It's burned into my brain like a brand. If it gets me excited, it's going to go in ahead of some other things. Now, we do have to do some real live journalistic planning. We don't want all the stories to be just from the North Woods, let's say, even though I live here. Mm-hmm. We need to spread this out. And I so love the Driftless area. I'm a sucker for that, so I got to be careful about putting too much of that in. But the idea is we work in a little bit of nostalgia. There are some first person I remember when kind of stories you'll find, three or four in every issue. It is a present day magazine. A certain amount of color photography. A little bit of natural resources, but we're a general interest magazine, so we range all over the place. You might find a hunting story just in October, November. You're not going to find a lot of that all through the rest of the year. So we're seasonal. We try to get geographic spread. We try to get some stories that are a little bit heartstrings, some stories we can. Humor is always the tallest order to fill. If we can find a good humor story, we get it in. The word magazine in Arabic means storehouse of information. We go for variety.
There you go. And food, too.
Food, well, everybody eats, Larry, you know. We have 6 pages of recipes in every issue, and I'll tell you what, when we first launched the magazine, we had a lot of overruns of some early issues, and let's hand them out at the sports show, even though it isn't really a sports magazine. Let's go meet and greet people. The one thing that stopped people in their tracks walking past our little booth there, recipes. They'd slam on the brakes and turn back and come look at them. A little bit of that in every issue.
Mike Bino, our guest, give a call at 1-800-642-1234 with your own thoughts or questions or maybe experiences to share. One of the stories I enjoyed and I'm just absolutely amazed at was Fred's Basement Bijou. What in the heck?
You better get over there and visit Fred. Fred's Basement Bijou. It's been reported in some other places before, but what a story. Fred Hermes in Racine is 90 years old, and he's got his basement bijou, okay? In his basement in Racine, and he built it into his home in 1955, he's got the biggest theater organ ever built. This mighty Wurlitzer. It came out of a 4,000-seat theater in Detroit. It took him 2 years to build his home, but 2 years to recondition this organ and 2 years to install it. It's got 2,500 pipes. Some of them are 20 feet long and weigh 500 pounds, but he's an old-time movie buff from going back to the Silence, and he's played the organ ever since he was a kid. His mother got him into piano lessons in the 30s. He found an old junk organ that somebody was getting rid of, and he and his buddies got it for $2 and hauled it home in a coaster wagon. His mother found this kid playing the organ at home when she came in. So this is where it's rooted to. He put that pipe organ in, and then he started noticing old movie palaces getting closed down, tore down. So he went on a crusade to save as much memorabilia, as many things out of these ornate movie palaces as he could. Chandeliers, leaded glass light fixtures, red velvet seats, ropes, tapestries, everything you can picture, statuary, moldings, columns. And he put them in his house, and he's got a 150-seat theater down there. And he plays accompaniment on that mighty Wurlitzer organ with some corny jokes and some show tunes and hymns and classical pieces, gags and banter, and people go there and love it. So his Basement Bijou is only available once in a while. Group tours, reservation only. We can give his phone number if you like, but it's still out there and available. And it's an example of something that somebody's doing at his home, resident. That's just absolutely unusual, and it's here in Wisconsin.
What an organ! You got a nice photo of him playing, and my goodness.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's got special effects, cymbals, everything. You know, these organs, they had them rising up on elevators from down in the basement, and it would come up, and there would be steam effects, and this is what they entertained people with when they went to the movies to see The Silence, and they played along with The Silence and the dialogue on the screen. It's a wonderful throwback, and it's so wonderful that it's being preserved by someone who cares about it.
Absolutely. Steve from Boulder Junction phoned in, couldn't hang on, but would like to know if he can get older issues of Our Wisconsin in print or even electronically.
Yes, we keep a certain number of back issues here. Right now we don't have anything available electronically. We have a little bit of a website here. I'm still the only editor on the staff, and hopefully we'll get another managing editor at some point, because if I walk in front of a logging truck here in Manitowish Waters, who knows? But, some backup. Back issues are available, and you can get them here at our office, 715-543-2311. They're $5 a copy. We handle the shipping no matter how big the bundle is.
715-543-2312?
2312 and 11.
Oh, and 11. Okay. 715-543-2312 or 11.
Here we go.
We had another person, Sis, emailed to say she loves the magazine, and she suggests people buy a subscription not only for themselves, but for someone in assisted living. She sent a subscription to her old teacher, who's in assisted living, and brings her old teacher and brings her own copy to her mom's assisted living place, and it winds up getting passed along to other residents, and pretty much read to death. But they can't get enough of it, she says.
Well, thank you. And we sometimes, when we have extra copies, we'll send 750 of them to the Veterans Home in King and some of these other places so people can enjoy them. We've heard that right along. Even though this is a present-day magazine, we do have a couple of the nostalgia pieces as far back as somebody writing today might remember. And we do ring some bells with people. But also there's this. Lots of vibrant color pictures that remind people of the places they grew up. We have some wildlife, some animals. We have stories about dogs in there. People elderly people in senior centers latch on to that kind of stuff. I've brought my dogs through some of these places, and they light up and start talking about the one they used to have. We show these magazines to them. They light up, and they just seize on these pictures, and people who have not said anything in quite a long time, all of a sudden, there's a connection again, and they get talking about it.
Well, and the photos are in some ways a kind of a reminder of Wisconsin trails and what it was like.
In a lot of ways, yes. We do print scenics. and we do print a lot about natural resources, wildlife, water. I mean, you've got 15,000 inland lakes. You've got the Mississippi and two Great Lakes here. Wisconsin is one of the prettiest states there is. It really is in so many ways. It can look like the seacoast in one place. It can look like the Pennsylvania with the mountains in another place. And it can look like central Illinois, flat as a pancake in some spots. Amazing diversity here.
I loved your centerfold is of the mergansers is really a nice photo.
Meganesers. Common mergansers. I'm going to drift here a little bit on the mergansers. The diving ducks are one of the first ones to come back to an area, and spring finally hit northern Wisconsin, Larry, this weekend.
Good.
My wife, Carol, and I were, we had one week away, and we went down and burned our navels on a beach for a while. I came back April 7th, 6th and 7th, to 10 inches of new snow. I plowed on two days straight. I don't like making a mess in a gravel driveway in April. Had to do it, and the first loon in the neighborhood started singing to us Sunday morning.
Oh.
And we have heard reports in Eagle River. I haven't seen one yet, but we heard that the hummingbirds last Friday were seen in Eagle River. So we're looking forward to it. Mergansers, the hooded mergansers and the common mergansers are among the first ducks that come back here when the lakes open. And the picture you're talking about was taken around Woodruff.
It's a cool photo. You know, somebody else asked me about this, and I'm interested to know as well, the Ma and Pa restaurants.
Yes. Uh-huh.
That's a great idea, I think. I don't know how you came up with that one and how you choose which one to feature.
Well, you know, that's another idea that's signature Ryman Publications. Yes, with nothing against all the chain restaurants and franchises out there, but You're going to find a lot of personality in some of these restaurants that are run by families, run by couples. There's no two that are exactly alike, and you can be very pleasantly surprised going into some of these places. You like homemade pie, that's where to find it. So what we do in every issue is we have a feature department called My Favorite Ma and Pa Restaurant, and we rely on somebody, generally in a smaller town. It doesn't have to be. We've got some from more urban neighborhoods, too, if they're very unique. Tell us what it is about this place that keeps you coming back, not only the food, but the people that run it, the people that go there. Why do you like it? Why does it fill your belly the right way and warm your heart? And people are all over that. We get tips on these places. Some people send in stories about it. But it tells the backstory of the people who founded these places and run it. It's not an easy business to be in. And let people know about it. In this current issue, we have one that's from Hayward, Lost Land Lake Lodge. It's an old resort, old American Plan resort from the early days, which has the prime rib and the fish fry, and they seat 112 people. But it's a throwback to the 1920s resorts and an interesting place to visit in a place known as the Quiet Lakes, which is three different lakes in the middle of Schwamigan-Nicolet National Forest called the Quiet Lakes. But how do we choose them? Okay, so we have here's a resort supper club kind of feel, but then we might want a sort of a diner feel. We did the Delta Diner up in, that's also in the woods, but it feels like New York, yeah, in Bayfield County. And we'll also do, let's say a little ham and egg downtown somewhere. Anything's wide open. We just we don't try to hit the same sort of category, so to speak, or geographic area all the time, so to speak.
Well, it's always a lot of fun, and I just for ordering, I know you just go online to ourwisconsin.com. I expected.
For subscriptions are available online, and our website is ourwisconsinmag.com.
OurWisconsinMag.com. That's probably the easiest way to get a subscription, although you can purchase copies.
Yes, you can purchase copies. We're on about 1,000 newsstands across the state. But if somebody's having trouble finding one, you can call us up, and we've got single issues here, 715-543-2311.
Always a pleasure, Mike. Thank you so much for taking time to be with us today.
Larry, it's always fun. I enjoy it immensely.
Well, we'll talk again. Mike Bino is the editor of Our Wisconsin Magazine. It's always a lot of fun. It really does celebrate a lot of what's so special about this state, and that's kind of why I like reading it. You may like it as well. So he'll be back, and we'll do this again with him. Tomorrow, a couple of authors one will be talking about the metamorphosis of salamanders and some other critters that call vernal pools home. What do you think of that? We'll take a look at some gardens, too. some successful gardeners. There's a book about that, too. Stay with us. Lots in store.